And also to talk about kind of what we're seeing going on in the world today. And remember, I don't care what you believe about our government. I only care why you believe it. So my goal is not to make you think one way or the other about more government or less. It's just to get you to think, to question what you're being told. Today, and if you want to email me a question, my email is commonlaw, one word, the number 7, the letter B, at gmail.com. Today, we're going to spend a significant amount of time talking about what we call the rules of evidence. It doesn't sound very exciting, and it really isn't, but it's one of those topics that a lot of people really don't understand. And when we talk about them, you'll see what I mean, but it is one of the more difficult subjects in law. It certainly was the most difficult class I took in law school. In law school, you have one final, and that determines your entire grade. And my evidence final, I think, took 5.5 hours to finish. The subject of evidence is obviously an entire 4-month course. So we're not going to get into that much minutiae, but I think you'll find some of the explanations for the rules make more sense, because some of the rules I know will confuse you, but then when you hear why it is the way it would make sense. And real quick, before I forget, something I forgot to mention on the last show, which blows me away, is that, you know, basically, I think it was about a month and a half or 2 months ago, our federal government told all of us that, yes, aliens are there and they've been hanging around. And they didn't say aliens. They said, well, there's nothing on this planet that we're aware of that can behave in the way that these things that these military pilots were seeing. And everybody was just like, ho-hum. I mean, I kind of thought people like, oh my God, you know, maybe Trump was right. We needed to start a space force or something. But anyway, just to me, that just is bizarro. But in light of what else I see people reacting to, it doesn't really shock me. And before I forget and we go to the break, in Idaho, the judges, district judges, have to run for re-election if somebody wants their job. And I think judges running for election of any kind ever is a really bad idea. There's no way for the average citizen to gauge the abilities of a judge. You can't do it, because you'd have to read what they've written, know about them, have been in front of them. It's sort of like, I wouldn't want the average citizen picking an engineer for my bridge, because they don't know anything about engineering. I want engineers to pick the engineer for my bridge. So, and also judges, when they campaign, they can't talk. They can't talk about what they would do. They can't talk about decisions they would overrule. I mean, it's really a pointless exercise that costs money and distracts from what they should be doing. If a judge is acting in a way that the majority of the people don't like, that's what the legislature's for. They can step in. For example, if you're giving too light of criminal sentences, they can step in and say, no, mandatory minimums, just like they did. But anyway, that's the law in Idaho. And the judge in the first district you will see on your ballot is named Judge Christensen. And that's who I'm going to vote for. He has ruled against me on a number of occasions. But what he does, which is the most important thing, is he never leaves your client or you feeling like he just ignored the law. He connects the dots. And connecting the dots, even if you don't like the result, is crucial to, you know, any sort of faith in our judicial system. So, and besides that, he's a nice guy. He's pleasant and courteous in court. And that is who I'm going to vote for. And I can probably tell you that about 99% of every other lawyer in the first district is going to vote for him. So keep that in mind when you see his name on the ballot. This is Common Law 7B. I am your host, Arthur Beislein, and we will be right back.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonners Ferry.
Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet has added ReadyWise Survival and Emergency Foods to their line of food and storage supplies. They also feature preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, plus ammo and knives. And, of course, Grunberg Sloss carries U.S. and world coins, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5, located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet.
Over the past year and a half, business has been anything but usual. Whether you're a small, family-run business, a corporation, you need a trusted financial partner to guide you along the way. At WaFd Bank, they've been helping local businesses succeed for over 100 years.
That's right. We've been around long enough to know one size doesn't fit all, which is why our business checking solution comes in three options. There's Simple Business Checking, a straightforward, easy-to-manage account for business. Also, Business Interest Checking, allowing business owners to earn money on their deposits. And finally, Business Analyze Checking, which uses account balances to offset fees.
All of WaFd Bank's business checking solutions cost just $100 to open and come with online banking and bill pay, mobile photo deposit, and can be paired with treasury management services like electronic ACH payments and credit card processing and payroll services.
Visit wafedbank.com or stop by the branch to see which account is right for your business. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Idaho Fence announces their annual spring DIY sale for fencing. Right now, Idaho Fence's Superstore has huge inventory. Everything you need to install that fence yourself and save big during this do-it-yourself sale at the best fence store in the Pacific Northwest. And for those of you who prefer not to build your own fence, Idaho Fence has free estimates on installation orders. 2430 West Celtis Way in Post Falls or online at idahofence.com. Call today.
She's kind of a big deal. Some people like to say it's only because of how she looks. She sticks her tongue out a lot. But there's just something about her that makes people do crazy things, like get tattoos of her face or wait in line for hours just to say hi. Lil Bub is a 2-year-old cat, an Instagram celebrity with a following bigger than some 90s television stars. And it all started because she was adopted. You can't buy a best friend like Lil Bub, but you can adopt one. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. My email is commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Shoot me an email, ask me a question, tell me your opinion. I'm here and I'm listening. I'm just waiting for somebody to reach out to me and talk. But I know you're out there because I was in the coffee shop, Starbucks, the other day, and I actually heard somebody talking about my radio show, and I didn't know who they were. So I would love it if somebody would engage with me, besides the people I drag down here and make do it. Anyway, part of this show, I think, is kind of therapeutic for me because I have a month in between these things and I see all kinds of things that just send me into not really a rage, just like a complete state of confusion as what is wrong with our people in our country. And what I'm talking about now is Congressman McCarthy from California. If you've seen it all in the last few days, he comes out and flatly says he didn't do something. And then a day later, they have an audio tape of him saying exactly that. And, you know, I get that we don't all remember exactly what we said, but we all remember how we felt. And so basically what he was saying is, I never implied that. I never said that. Well, it's a flat out lie. I mean, and it's just a lie. And nobody seems to care. I just don't understand. But I do understand. It's because the philanderer in chief that we had before was just a liar about everything. And his supporters just don't care. And I'm like, well, if he's lying to you about one thing, why don't you think maybe he's lying to you about something else? Perhaps lying to you about the idea that he gives a flying fragon or a rolling donut hole about poor people, because he does not. He does not care at all. I mean, I don't understand how this rich guy who pays no taxes, flies around in a jet, and gives huge tax breaks to rich people became the poor person's hero. Said it last time. Maybe I'll say it every show until this guy falls off the radar. But I do kind of know when. How do you convince people to vote against their self-interest? Meaning, why would a poor person vote for somebody who's going to give tax breaks to the rich that are not going to benefit them at all? Well, because they were scared. They tell them the liberals are going to take away your guns, you're going to turn your kids into drag queens, and are let every psychotic Mexican into our country that they can. That's how they do it. I mean, everybody's so afraid of this nonsense that they're willing to just let these rich old, greedy old, I'll let you fill in the P for GOP, in my opinion. I'm dumbfounded why nobody, remember when Bill Clinton just on TV said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman? Well, that's pretty broad, and everybody lost their mind over that. I really don't understand. The other thing I heard the other day is Trump's getting fined $10,000 a day for every day he doesn't cooperate with an investigation. Well, do you remember when Clinton's former business associate sat in jail for I don't know how many months because she wouldn't cooperate with an investigation? So I'm not understanding why that guy's not sitting in jail. If you ignore a lawful subpoena, you will be in jail until you comply with it. That is absolutely going to happen. I think the only reason he's not in jail is because of all the lunatics out there that somehow think he's still president or he still should be. Anyway, thank you for listening. I feel much better. I'm sure I'll think of something else to complain about in a while, but let's talk about evidence. And what are the rules of evidence? Well, the rules of evidence basically are what control what you can put in front of the person or the people who are going to find facts in a case. It's like, what can they consider? And well, why do we have rules at all? Primarily because we don't trust juries. And I can speak to that one because I think I told the story when jury was actually instructed on a particular thing and they ruled against my client, and I overheard him in Starbucks basically ignoring the instruction that they had. So that's the main reason we have to have rules. We have rules that relate to, the matter being tried. Like if you're doing this, then you have to prove this. And if you're doing that, then they have to prove this, that kind of thing. And then you have other policies related to matters that are really outside litigation, which have to do with, we'll get to those and you'll see more when we start talking about them. But the fundamental rule of evidence, the most important one, is that all relevant evidence is admissible. That's the opening, that's the assumption. Now, what is relevant evidence? And this is from an Idaho case that says, evidence that tends to prove the existence of a fact of consequence in the action and has any tendency to make the existence of a fact more probable than it would be without the evidence. That is relevant evidence. But you'll see as we go through this that highly relevant evidence is often not allowed into evidence. It's not admitted into evidence, and it's not supposed to be anyway, ever even brought up in front of a jury or a judge. It happens all the time, and they say you must disregard, which, yeah, we can all unring the bell. Once they've heard it, they've heard it. But I think that there's a guy named Weinstein who has an evidence manual, and he explains this idea of why relevant evidence would not be always admitted. And he says, nevertheless, truth-finding is not always the law's overriding aim. Trials in our judicial system are intended to do more than merely determine what happened. Among the goals, in addition to truth-finding, which the rules of procedure and evidence seek to satisfy, are terminating disputes, economizing resources, inspiring confidences, supporting independent social policies, permitting ease in prediction and application, and adding to the efficiency of the trial process. So in essence, what that says is that you have all these, you have a rule that says all relevant evidence is admissible, and then you have a whole slew of competing policy concerns that would render that relevant evidence not admissible. And I can give you a couple examples. Evidence of an offer of settlement. Now, you'd think that if I said, look, I'll give you $5,000 for, you know, smashing your fence, well, that is fairly indicative that I know I did something wrong, right? Well, that's not admissible. It's not admissible because they want me to, if I can make an offer that you'll accept, they want me to feel free to do that. So if I don't have to worry about you turning around and telling everybody, look, he knew he did something wrong because he offered to give me $5,000 for smashing my fence. That one is one of the top ones that really confuses clients. They're like, well, he said that they would pay this or that and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, well, that we can't use it for anything. That's also why I've mentioned mediation briefly, which is a voluntary settlement process. But that's also why in mediation, the entire mediation is confidential. Nothing you say in there, you know, short of saying you're going to commit a violent crime or that you have hurt children in the past, is it's all confidential. Mediators have some ability to breach that confidentiality. If the way I read the rules, they can, it's up to them. I've only ever seen that happen when there was a dispute about whether or not there was actually an agreement reached in mediation. I've never seen a mediator talk about what anybody said other than as it relates to whether or not an agreement was reached. So that's one that is confusing to my clients. The other one that's even more confusing, I think they're all pretty confusing, which is why I picked them out, is one called evidence of subsequent remedial measures. That is a lot of big words to say you fixed it, which means you acknowledged it was broke. So, for example, if I'm leaving your restaurant and I go out and I put my hand on the handrail and the handrail's kind of loose and it causes me to lose my balance and fall down and get hurt, and then, you know, as soon as I'm cleared the scene, you send your handyman out there immediately and, you know, fix it, well, I can't introduce evidence of that. I mean, even though it shows that you were acknowledging that it was in disrepair, well, we want you to go out there and repair it as soon as possible without any repercussions of it being held against you at some later date. And that, you know, that one comes up a whole lot, but mainly just in personal injury type things. I've seen it actually come up in business deals, and that was a really unusual one. I've never seen it before because generally it's just that what I just described is you fix up something that caused somebody harm. Well, this case was about the errors in the document and the attorney was doing everything to try to fix the problems. And so they were trying to introduce evidence that he knew it was a problem because he was trying to fix it. And the court kept it out because it was a subsequent remedial measure, which that one makes my brain hurt just thinking about it, but, cause I don't think it works, but, anyway, what's another one? Well, I think we're coming up on our next break. I'll save, continuing this discussion. This is Common Law 7B. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. My email is commonlaw7b@gmail.com. And we will be right back.
Selkirk's Pendray Transit is your convenient and free local bus transportation. Hop on the spot stop nearest you. Hours are 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. with 40 stops 7 days per week serving Dover, Sandpoint, Kootenai, and Pendray. The map, schedule, and live bus tracking is available at spotbus.org. They are following FTA cleaning guidelines, keeping spot passengers and drivers safe. Again, visit spotbus.org to see spot schedules, map, and bus tracker. Selkirk's Pendray Transit is your convenient and free local bus transportation. See you on spot.
Let thick and thin beams of Bonner's Ferry, your hometown sawmill, help you. Spruce up your home with new flooring, a decorative mantel, or desktop, or beams up to 44 feet long,
Just about anything you can dream up, the guys at TNT can help design. For all your wood product needs, it's Thick and Thin Lumber, fast, reliable service, and competitive pricing. See the mill at 4355 Cow Creek Road or check out their website at tntbeams.com.
NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is the largest grassroots organization for mental health in the country. Hi, this is Jessica Rachels. Our Far North branch has been serving Bonner County for over 14 years. Your mental health matters to us, and we are dedicated to improving your quality of life in any way we can. As always, we welcome all to the NAMI Far North Support Meeting every third Wednesday of the month at the VFW Hall on Pine Street. Contact NAMIFarNorth.org for more information.
The world's largest manufacturer of wood fencing boards, Alta Forest Products, is currently hiring. Alta is looking for dedicated people to join their team. Alta employs over 400 dedicated people across the Pacific Northwest and is currently hiring for their Naples, Idaho mill. Alta Forest Products offers one of the highest starting wages in North Idaho, as well as life, medical, dental, and vision insurance, sick leave, plus matching 401k. They are now also offering part-time 20-hour per week shifts. No experience necessary. Join the Alta team now. Apply online at jobs@altafp.com. That's jobs@altafp.com. Made in the USA, Alta Forest Products is the world leader in quality wood fencing. Apply now for full or part-time at jobs@altafp.com. Alta Forest Products in nearby Naples, Idaho. jobs@altafp.com.
Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers. You can always find people who are helping. Thank you to all the first responders who put their lives in danger to help us when my brothers and sisters need them. We look out for the helpers because they look out for us.
Thank you, first responders! Thank you, first responders!
Learn how you can help first responders by texting BRAVE to 24365.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Today we have been discussing the rules of evidence, which are boring, but I think kind of interesting to understand a little bit why they work and why sometimes what you see in a courtroom doesn't appear to make any sense at all. And we were discussing before we left, when you have evidence that seems to be relevant to what you're trying to prove, but it's still not allowed in to evidence, meaning it can't be considered by the fact finder, and you know, based on competing policy considerations other than just finding the truth of the matter. We talked about evidence of offers of settlement and subsequent remedial measures, but the third one is something called character evidence. And this one is also, it comes up all the time. Just the other day, there's one spouse is suing the ex-spouse for beating her up on a particular occasion. And so she's representing herself and she's trying to come in and talking about all the other times he beat her up. That's character evidence. And it is not admissible. The rule is that evidence of a person's character cannot be used to prove that they acted in conformity with that character on any particular occasion. Meaning that if I punch you in the bar and you sue me, you can't put on evidence from 50 other people that I've done the same thing to over the last 26 years. I think most people understand the rationale for that rule, and it's primarily that we don't trust the jury to not convict them for basically just being a violent person. But it's obviously highly relevant evidence. Now, what happens if I get up on the stand and I say, well, I would never punch anybody. I'm a nonviolent person. Well, then I just opened the door to all those 50 other incidents. And so you can get it into evidence. Now, one thing that was always kind of confusing to me was this. There's another rule that talks about other crimes, wrongs, or acts. And it's, well, if there are other crimes, wrongs, or acts, doesn't that sound like character evidence? Well, this is one of the issues in a lot of times in evidence, why it's so complicated is because a lot of what part of the rules of evidence apply depends on what you're trying to do with the evidence that you're submitting. So if I, you know, I, if I'm char- if the defendant's charged with possession of cocaine, I can't put on evidence that he was busted for having cocaine 2 years ago. But if he gets up there and says, I didn't know it was cocaine, well, now he's opened the door for me to say, yeah, you did, because of this incident 2 years ago, it's more likely that you did know that. So it's kind of similar to the opening the door. But then there's also other things like knowledge of guilt, which is, well, you were in prison and you tried to escape, or you fled, you ran from the police, those types of things. And knowledge of guilt is also relevant to, I mean, a lot of times there's evidence that's not relevant to what the person is being charged with in a criminal case, for example. Like, for example, if I'm charged with burglary, now burglary and theft and larceny are there, I can't remember all different, but I think burglary is the one where you have to actually be entering the home at night with the intent of stealing something. I mean, not any part of that crime involves the concealment of your crime. So there's what would it be relevant to that you had burner phones? If it's not part of the crime, well, it shows knowledge of guilt, which brings me to something that I thought was really interesting and can't wait to see how it plays out. But, you know, one thing you'll find all over appellate criminal decisions is discussions about the fact that people were not using their regular lines of communication and using what we call burner phones as being admissible as evidence of guilt. Well, it is really good evidence of guilt. Sure, I mean, prosecutors love that. It's like, why weren't you using your phone? I mean, why would you be using the awful little Cricket phone when you got your iPhone Pro 13 or whatever, right? So it's good stuff. Well, I don't know if y'all have seen this, but there's 6 hours of missing phone calls to the White House on January 6, 2021. There's just no phone calls. Well, here's the problem. We know for a fact, it is not fake news, it is a fact. Kevin McCarthy spoke to the former who shall not be named during those riots, during this 6 hours. And that's undeniable. That occurred. So what phone did he call? Well, but then it gets a little more interesting. We know McCarthy called Trump. So he had this burner phone number, or whatever number he was using. This is starting to sound a little bit like a conspiracy. Well, that's exactly what it was. Without any proof of any wrongdoing in the election, you had how many federal courts say, no, you got nothing here. You had Bill Barr saying, you got nothing here. You have all these people putting together a plan to overthrow the results of an election. And I do not understand for the life of me why they're not swinging from a rope for treason. I don't care if you don't like the result. The minute you think you can go outside the processes for handling disputes within our government, you're guilty of treason. You don't get to do that. You don't get to say, I don't like the results, so we're going to make up some stuff and cause all this trouble and spread all these lies. I don't know why Congress hasn't outlawed saying an election was fraudulently conducted unless you have proof. I just don't understand it. You can't go into a fire or a crowded theater and yell fire. What is the difference? So if you have proof, great, take it to the papers, whatever. If you don't, shut up, because it's just not the case. And these guys, you know, they better throw the book at them. But anyway, so that's what we call knowledge of guilt. That's ways you can get other types of sort of like character evidence in, even though it's not really character evidence. You have statements between married couples. If I told my wife that I stole all the money from the bank, well, that would be pretty relevant to convicting me of robbing the bank. But we want to make sure that there's always open and free communications between married couples. And so anything that you say to your wife or she says to you cannot be introduced into evidence unless the person who was making the statement waives that privilege. That would be what we call privilege. Privileges are an absolute right to not testify. That means you can't force them to come in there. The most obvious one that everybody understands is the attorney-client privilege. I don't know that there are any exceptions to that. Maybe I've never looked at the rule regarding harming children, but I think maybe if you're going to do something serious in the future or you've harmed children, maybe it's not there. But what's another one? Oh, payment of medical expenses and other similar expenses. So if I hurt you in your car and you're in the hospital, I'm paying your hospital bills. Well, that seems to show that I obviously knew that I had done something wrong. But we don't want to discourage that kind of behavior. If I'm willing to do that, then they want me to do it without repercussion of having say it shows you knew you did something wrong. Otherwise, why would you just be giving me money? Now, there is an important exception to that, which is usually what comes up, is that whatever you say to them when you pay the medical bills, that is not protected by any kind of a privilege. So if you walk up and say, oh my goodness, that's all my fault, I'm so sorry, let me pay your bills, all that's coming in. Unless you say, if I pay your bills, will you not sue me? Well, then none of it's coming in. So that's why trials are so completely draining, is because imagine sitting there for 4, 5, 6 hours and you have to listen to every single thing that comes out of every single witness's mouth and have to have this incredible volume of rules in your head, and you got to be able to spit them out the minute you hear what the problem is. You know, objection, hearsay. Well, that's not going to get you anywhere. Why is it hearsay? Now, we're going to get to hearsay in a minute. It's the one thing everybody sort of uses correctly when they talk about the rules of evidence. But they are draining. I mean, they're complicated, and I'm not even touching on some of them that would bore you to tears and confuse you as bad as they confuse all the rest of us. What's another one? Oh, liability insurance and the existence of liability insurance. You can never talk about that in front of a judge or a jury. That's not because of anything other than you just run the risk of a jury or a judge awarding too much money because they know it's covered by insurance. Now, with a judge, they know what types of claims are usually covered by insurance, and they all know which lawyers are retained by insurance companies. So if you see a lawyer, you see this type of claim, you probably are pretty sure it's covered by insurance, but I don't see that that's ever infected anything that, they've ever decided to do. So those are some of those are just examples of some of the policy considerations that are part of the rules of evidence, which I guess is the explanation for why sometimes what you see in a courtroom just makes zero sense. You don't understand why you can't tell people that I punch a person in a bar once a week, every week. So anyway, we'll come back after this next break, and I will talk to you about hearsay so you can understand really what it is when you use the term. But most people do use it accurately. I mean, when you say that's all hearsay, what you're implying is probably not terribly reliable. And that is what all of hearsay law is about, is reliability of what you're putting into evidence. This is Common Law 7B. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein, and we will be right back.
Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet has added ReadyWise Survival and Emergency Foods to their line of food and storage supplies. They also feature preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, plus ammo and knives. And, of course, Grunberg Sloss carries U.S. and world coins, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5, located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet.
Over the past year and a half, business has been anything but usual. Whether you're a small, family-run business, a corporation, you need a trusted financial partner to guide you along the way. At WaFd Bank, They've been helping local businesses succeed for over 100 years.
That's right. We've been around long enough to know one size doesn't fit all, which is why our business checking solution comes in three options. There's Simple Business Checking, a straightforward, easy-to-manage account for business. Also, Business Interest Checking, allowing business owners to earn money on their deposits. And finally, Business Analyze Checking, which uses account balances to offset fees.
All of WaFd Bank's business checking solutions cost just $100 to open and come with online banking and bill pay, mobile photo deposit, and can be paired with treasury management services like electronic ACH payments and credit card processing and payroll services.
Visit wafedbank.com or stop by the branch to see which account is right for your business. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Idaho Fence announces their annual spring DIY sale for fencing. Right now, Idaho Fence's Superstore has huge inventory. Everything you need to install that fence yourself and save big during this do-it-yourself sale at the best fence store in the Pacific Northwest. And for those of you who prefer not to build your own fence, Idaho Fence has free estimates on installation orders. 2430 West Celtis Way in Post Falls or online at idahofence.com. Call today.
She's kind of a big deal. Some people like to say it's only because of how she looks. She sticks her tongue out a lot. But there's just something about her that makes people do crazy things, like get tattoos of her face or wait in line for hours just to say hi. Lil Bub is a 2-year-old cat, an Instagram celebrity with a following bigger than some 90s television stars. And it all started because she was adopted. You can't buy a best friend like Lil Bub, but you can adopt one. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
North Idaho's Radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. My email is commonlaw7b@gmail.com. I'd like to have any questions from you. I'd like anybody to come down here and sit and chat with me who wants to. There is plenty of room down here. Anyway, today we've been talking about the rules of evidence, and I don't know. Like, I think that they're pretty interesting. The last one, though, we want to talk about today is called hearsay. And what is hearsay? As I said before the break, you're kind of on the right track when you say that's just hearsay. Well, it's basically a rule of evidence that says if it's unreliable evidence, then we're not going to let it in. Even if it seems to be relevant, it's not reliable. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You heard it, and you're testifying. You heard somebody say something outside of court, and now you are in court testifying about what they said. That's hearsay. It's an out-of-court statement offered in court to prove the truth of the matter asserted in that statement other than by the person who made the statement. Now, the second part, that little part in there where I said to prove the truth of the matter asserted, that's where hearsay gets really complicated from a legal standpoint. So the general rule is if I heard you say, I saw Johnny down at the drive-in about 10 minutes before, this person's house was broken into right next to the drive-in, and he said something about he was going to go in there and do that. If Johnny's a defendant, that's a different issue. But if it was offered for some reason to prove that Johnny broke in there, ignoring the admission of a party opponent, I know if you're a lawyer out there, you're going, wait a minute. But the idea is you have to have the person who made the statement in there if you're going to try to use the statement to prove what is in the statement. So, yeah, confusing, isn't it? So, because if it's not offered to prove the matter, well, then it's not hearsay. So if a simple example is this, if somebody testifies that they heard me say that I own my neighbor's property, but not knowing it was my neighbor's, just I thought I owned this parcel of property. Well, if that person testifies to that statement in court for the purpose of proving that I own that property, which you couldn't, but anyway, you see the point, well, then it's not admissible because it's hearsay. But if the person is in court testifying that I said that to show that I didn't intend to trespass on my neighbor's property, then it's not hearsay. It's not trying to prove that it's my property. It's trying to prove that I thought it was and I made a mistake. Incidentally, a mistake is not a defense to trespass, believe it or not. It is to like timber trespass when you're asking for treble damages and all that kind of stuff. But the mere act of entering someone's property is trespass. It doesn't require the intent that you know you're doing it, except when you're talking about timber trespass. So that's the first trick about hearsay is it hearsay in the first place? Well, it depends entirely on why you're trying to put the statement into evidence. But if it is hearsay, it's not admissible. So there are a whole bunch of exceptions to the hearsay rule, meaning that a statement can be hearsay but still admissible. And all of these exceptions are all related to the fact that there's something about the way the statement was either heard or made that creates what we call indicia of reliability. I don't know how else to say it, except I guess it makes it so the statement seems more reliable and because of the way it was made. Just some examples are, but the big one is an admission of a party opponent. When I was telling you about my, breaking in thing, that's why I said ignore that, because what that one says is if I'm suing you for breaking into my house and somebody heard you say that you had done it, well, they can get up there and testify to that statement because it's an admission that it's an admission against your own interest, meaning it's not likely they would have said it if that wasn't true. So hearsay is not, it's the question with hearsay is not so much about the person who is reciting what was said. It's not about their veracity. It's about the accuracy of what they're saying. If they're going to say somebody said something against their interest, I've never really got that myself. I'm like, well, yeah, but if they don't have a dog in the fight, that just goes to bias and whatever. So they're, say that's what they said. Well, why would they say that if it wasn't true? And most of them are not quite so exotic. You have exceptions like for public records. Like if you go down to the courthouse and get a certified copy of a deed that's, well, not the courthouse anymore, the county recorder's office, certified copy of a deed, well, any written evidence is all hearsay. Unless it was written in court, well, it was written out of court, and now you're trying to introduce it into court. So all written evidence is hearsay. So a document, a deed is hearsay, but if you get it certified, then it has these, there's little reason to question what it says. The other ones are, well, one thing people often do is like, well, I can get an affidavit from this person for trial. And I said, well, that's not going to do us any good. An affidavit's not admissible. I mean, it's admissible in a lot of pretrial procedures, motions, that kind of things. But when you get to court, just because it's a sworn statement, it's still hearsay. Now, there is an exception for hearsay for prior testimony. And there's, every one of these rules I'm mentioning to you is probably an hour to 2 hours to talk about all the facets of it. I mean, that's how this stuff is. I think it's the hardest thing that we do in law. It's the hardest thing to remember, and it's the hardest thing to keep track of. So that is hearsay. I mean, I tried to write this in such a way that I could talk about it, but it really is a difficult thing to talk about. It's so complicated that it's just, it's very fact specific, meaning, I can give the general rules, but until I know what you're trying to talk about, then you can't really talk about it. So there's other parts of the rules of evidence that are, you have a thing called the best evidence rule that, if you want to offer the contents of a document, you have to produce the original, and that's not even that complicated. And then there are other rules of evidence that relate to what we call the substantive aspects of the case. Remember I said that right in the beginning. Burdens of proof and burdens of persuasion. Those are rules of evidence. Burdens of proof, I mean, most people understand what that means. Is, you know, whoever is doing what, whoever brought the case is going to be the one who bears the burden of proving their case. The other side doesn't have to disprove their case. So in whether it's a complaint or whether it's a counterclaim, it doesn't make any difference. Whoever brings the claim has to prove it. And then the rules of evidence will, well, not so much the rules of evidence combined with judicial law on, you know, what is the burden of proof? You know, if I want to enforce an oral agreement to sell a piece of land, I have to prove the terms of that agreement by clear and convincing evidence, amongst many other things, if you want to try to enforce an oral agreement to convey land. That's one thing, like an example of the differing, why it substantively affects things is the OJ trial is a good way to think of the substantive law of burdens of proof in the rules of evidence is, well, when OJ was acquitted of murdering his ex-wife and Ronald Goldman, I think it was Ronnie K, his dad and him mixed up. Well, he was acquitted of that, but then they sued him in civil court because the burden in civil court is less. It's just more likely than not. If you think there's a 50.0001% chance that he did it, well, then that's what you can find. But the rules of evidence apply uniformly to criminal and civil trials. You'll find that criminal trials sometimes have criminal procedure anyway, has a few more exceptions. Like, for example, a police report. Remember I mentioned that there are public documents. Another exception to hearsay is something called records of a regularly conducted business activity, if you're just doing what you always do, you know, you're not, there's no pending litigation, you don't know there's any litigation, well, then there's no motivation for you to be doctoring documents and, you know, all that kind of thing. Well, that would be a police report. I mean, they do their job, they write a report. Well, in that obviously is hearsay. You can't introduce that, but the defendant can if the defendant wants to. Because the stakes in a criminal case are a lot higher, the rules, there are some varying rules there. But for the most part, you know, the analysis and how you think about all these rules is pretty much the same. Lastly, I just want to mention some common objections. If you've ever had to sit through a jury trial, be it a juror or you have the unfortunate circumstance of being a party, you hear the objection leading, which is what it sounds like, which is, you know, on direct examination, that means if I've called you or whoever to the stand, if I called a witness to the stand and I'm going to question that witness, I can't ask questions that suggest an answer. So, for example, I can't say, isn't it true that you went to the house that day with the purpose of gathering your tools? I can ask, did you go to the house? Yes. Why did you go to the house? To gather my tools. That's okay. Now, on cross-examination, that rule doesn't apply. There is no objection to leading on cross. You can say, isn't it true you went to the house to remove your tools, but you took her tools also? Another one you'll hear very often is called foundation objection, lack of foundation. That basically just means we don't have any reason to know why you think you know what you know, which is, you know, Johnny said this. No, wait a minute. Objection, lack of foundation. Where were you? What time of day was it? Who else was there? And so anyway, it looks like we're getting towards the end. I thank you all for listening. I'm Arthur Beislein, commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Send me an email and hope you all have a good remainder of your week, and we will see you in a month.
K246 CU, 1450 KBFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400 KSPT Sandpoint, a Blue Sky Broadcasting radio station.